Alright, we should be live. You wanna hit your dual streams?
Yeah.
There you go.
This is so exciting.
I'm not gonna leave until you guys give me confirmation.
No, I'm looking online right now.
Yeah,
I'm gonna push.
I'm not gonna leave.
you don't trust us?
I don't trust you anymore.
It's thinking.
I've been burned.
Look, there it is.
Yeah.
Okay?
Alright.
We're good.
There's something going on. Wow.
And it's okay.
Show it.
No, we don't need headphones now.
You just hear those.
Oh, so you got rid of the feedback.
No,
so you should mute that.
Yeah.
Or pause it even to save bandwidth. Cool.
Just close it.
Yeah. I just wanted to mute.
So what do we do now? Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. How many people are online, John? We usually wait till like 50.
There are 61 watching now.
Already?
They were already in the chat going like, when is it starting?
Where are you guys?
64 now.
Hisham just said, finally Scott in the new studio. Hey everybody, check this out. We're gonna make .NET Core run on a 10-inch floppy disk. This is a new feature, it's coming soon. It's gonna fit in 160K, but we're gonna have to make it double-sided, so watch out for that.
Floppy disk? What's that?
Just slide it into his laptop there.
Yeah, it fits in the new Ultrabooks, so watch for that. Cool. Hi, friends.
Hi, Scott.
How's it going? I'm so excited to be in the new studio, and I've actually not been on the show in a while. And you're remote still, John.
I am.
Awesome. And all of your wall hangings are straight, which makes me feel a lot better, because it's usually one of them is crooked.
I do that. I actually intentionally put one slightly off. I learned, Scott, when you said that you intentionally have some demos fail to keep people like on the edge of their seat, you know, I do the same.
I've been
like,
known
just
to do that.
Slightly very.
It's all lies.
So
below the screen there, I'm sure his laundry is actually sitting in that corner, right? Right about there.
It's true. Cool. So we're in the new studio. Dan, how are you?
I'm good. Doing well.
Mikhail, how are you?
Everything's great.
Have you been on the show a couple times, right?
I actually haven't. Yeah.
Hooray! Initiation!
All right, who are you?
Hi, everyone. My name is Mikhail Mengistu. I'm an engineer on the ASP.NET Core team. I work specifically on SignalR, and I'll be showing the SignalR Java client today. I've been on the team almost 2 years now. Yeah, things are going great.
Cool. And also from Portland. So we got two Portland people representing Portland. Here on the stand-up, which makes me feel much better and more comfortable. Sorry.
With your peeps.
You can come to Portland sometime.
We actually went to the same alma mater.
That is true.
Are you serious?
Yeah
in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You went to MIT?
I did. So did he.
Yeah.
I went to Portland Community College.
That was great. That's wonderful. It's great to see the progress.
I know you went to MIT.
I did.
Oh, my goodness.
Just a little while ago. A little before he did.
I visited once. It was really cool.
It is a cool place to
Very
go.
Cool. All right.
Explore.
So how do we want to do this? You're going to do some community?
How about if I share some community stand-up links real quick?
Do the people know about our buttons?
I don't know about those buttons.
Our fancy new
This
studio.
Is our control panel now to control streaming for OBS. Because we're like official now. Instead of using Google Hangouts, we're using Open Broadcasting Software and GoLNAS from the, and you just left, John.
Well, I switched my thing over to
share
my desktop.
So we're using Open Broadcasting Services now, Open Broadcasting Studio, the way that Twitch does it. And we've got this really cool macro button thing here, so I get to play director, which is very exciting. So if I
push,
there's literally
Galloway.
A button that says John G.
Yeah.
Wow.
Look at that.
There's a button for me.
It is.
Strange, only,
it's amazing.
He's the only one that has his own button.
Like, no, he does not.
He's special that way.
Cool.
Okay, so I have just a few super high quality links this week. This one, I don't know how deep in depth I should go into it. This is Steve Gordon, and he's talking about endpoint routing.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if you're going to talk about that.
I was going to show a little bit of it. But,
that's great. So I think this one's nice. So Steve goes through and he writes up, you know, what is endpoint routing? I think previously it was talked about as dispatcher. He's been updating it based on conversations with James and other people. So the name now, endpoint routing, and my understanding high level is that this allows you, the goodness of like MVC routing, but it allows it earlier in the pipeline so your middleware, your other middleware can take advantage and understand the routes as well.
That's true.
So, yeah, cool. So that's he goes great. Through, shows a small example. I'm not going to show much more of this because I don't want to spoil your fun.
That's super awesome to see people like trying out the CI builds and keeping up with what's happening in the repo. Like, that's awesome.
I love it, and it's this great feedback loop. I've got some other some others we'll be showing too from people that regularly post and that we feature, and it's cool seeing the interaction between them as they'll kind of say, hey, did you check this out, or that kind of stuff. So here's a neat one from Philip. So he wrote about an iFile provider for Azure Blob Storage. So the idea here is ASP.NET has had this iFile provider thing forever, and the idea is you can abstract away, you can talk to something as if it was a file, but it's not a file. So the idea is like, people have used this for things like reading assets out of like a NuGet package or something like that. So what he's doing here is he's actually set up Azure Blob Storage as an iFile provider. So what's neat with that is in one place you register your Azure Blob Storage, and then anywhere else in the site you can just interact with it as if it's a file under slash files. So meaning you can just refer to the code as if it's inside your app, and boom, magic. So
sweet.
I think this is really, really cool. So I'm gonna keep an eye on that one. This one's interesting. John Bristow this is from a survey. This is survey data. This is definitely weighted towards if you scroll down to the bottom here, it talks about this is from an online pop-up at Telerik.com. So this is weighted towards people who are buying, or on the Telerik site. But it is interesting seeing over time the demographic shift. So here's the numbers, and I'm just going to go to the actual, the data stuff that they saw. They are seeing more people aware of ASP.NET Core, which is good. They're seeing, people continuing to look at and adopt ASP.NET Core. I did think it was a little interesting that, this is folks who are just kind of getting on board with ASP.NET Core, and he's worried about their awareness of Blazor, which is completely new and experimental. So I am not so worried about that personally. But I thought this was really cool, seeing the kind of change over time as people are getting more involved with ASP.NET Core. All right.
Near and dear to my heart. Yes.
Yeah. So Andrew Locke is writing about Segment. And Segment is something I was not aware of before. It is basically a layer on top of other analytics engines. It's they have an analytics JS library. And the idea is you can feed in from one place to multiple things. So say you want to be tracking, you want to use Google Analytics and Mixpanel and, so whatever else. They have tons of other integrations. So what he's gone through and done here is kind of showed the plumbing of, here's setting up your Segment account, but then plumbing this data into multiple different things. So for instance, this could go into and feed your analytics, could feed Bing ads, could feed all different kinds of services there. So he's shown that, and then of course wrapping up with, you've got to write this analytics code out, and so he's showing writing that out in Razor. So pretty cool. All right, so here's one from Mohammed Rahan Sahid, and he's showing about optimally configuring ASP.NET Core HTTP Client Factory. So these are kind of his opinionated looks at, here's how I would like to see HTTP Client Factory set up. Some interesting things he pulls out in here. He talks about setting up poly for retries. He talks about gzip compression and setting up compression. He talks about as well, and I think this is a really interesting one, the X correlation ID HTTP header. So the idea is having this correlation ID to track all the way through the logs, where things are going. So there's several different things in here, setting up the policies, et cetera, et cetera. Here are some where he talks about the correlation ID, so kind of plumbing that through. And of course, as always, he's got a GitHub project where you can dig into the code.
That almost seems like a bunch of stuff that could be in like a NuGet package, like his
apply these conventions or policies to my HP client factory as like a just a broad convention across the board. I don't know. It's if he feels like those are good practices just for any app, maybe that should be something that could be pre-built and just added to an existing application.
You're right. Yeah, that sounds good. I'll ask him about that. Okay, here's David Pine doing a walkthrough of Blazor. So here he's just kind of overviewed. He previously did an interview with Steve Sanderson about Blazor. Here he's just kind of pointing people to the getting started stuff. And then he went through and wrote an internet Chuck Norris database client. So he's pulling data from the Chuck Norris facts. And so here's showing how to do that, going through and setting it all up. So it's nice as a walkthrough, and then at the very end you end up with the Chuck Norris. So here we can get information about Chuck Norris.
Wait, what is he carrying? What is that? It's like
cookies? I'm not sure.
Smoothies?
Like those are smoothies.
Protein shakes. Okay,
that's
yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I wouldn't think Chuck Norris needs protein shakes, but there you go. All right, big exciting post. This one is about Bing.com and their move to .NET Core 2.1.
Wow. So yeah.
.NET Core, Bing.com, very large service. They also have a lot of internal services calling each other. So a ton of stuff going on. So this is cool to see a large real world production application moving to .NET Core and talking about why they did it and what they got out of it, what they learned. So as they talk about in here, this is things like their view logic is written in Razor. This is kind of all the way up the stack. It's not just some .NET Core stuff in the background. So some neat things. This ready to run images thing is exciting. So the idea there is, when you deploy your code out to a server, there's still some JIT that goes on. And with ready to run, that kind of NGen step happens at build time. And then you're pushing that out. It's already pop it on a server and it's ready to go. So that's exciting. You see here the performance. This is showing their server latency dropping 34%. So that's neat. Then take some time on this. It's easy to kind of scroll, skim the post.
Can you control plus that for me?
Sure.
Thank you. And go back to that chart for a second, because that's the real.
That's a beautiful chart.
That drop in latency is what, 34%?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks.
This is huge. So this next part here is really interesting, and I recommend kind of digging through or clicking through on these links here. What they're showing is, here's why they got that 34% jump. So they dug in specifically to their performance data and showed what was going faster. So these are the kinds of things, like as I've been doing .NET Core talks lately, and I'll tell people, like, this is why being on .NET Core is so great. Every release gets you all these performance benefits that are just magic behind the scenes, right? So if you're checking string equality and you move to .NET Core, your code gets faster. Stuff that's just happening behind the scenes.
Vectorization.
And one thing, if I may, that's worth pointing out, and we talked to the Bing team, is even though Bing is Microsoft and we are DevDiv in Microsoft, you would think that we like talk to each other all the time, but it's really different companies, right? Mm-hmm. Microsoft mm-hmm. is 100,000 people. It's basically 1,000 little 100-person companies. If Bing wanted some modification to like the CLR fundamentally, or they wanted to change C# fundamentally, it's not quite as easy as just ringing us up, demanding a feature, and fitting it into the thing. The fact that .NET Core is open source literally allowed them to modify it, change it, without talking to us, and then their negotiations change. They can show us, well, here's a thing that we want, here's a feature we want, here's a drop that we did.
And contribute back? Did we get some good contributions back from the Bing team, I assume, as
well,
part of
this? Well, so there's going to be features in C# 8.0 that are modified specifically because Bing found them to be useful. And if we weren't open source, mm-hmm. it would have made the friction between organizations greater, and we might not have seen that cool feature.
That's cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And some of the things on this list, actually, I think it was this call I, this is an internal call
That's
optimization. And that was something where they... the Bing team said, hey, we could use this, people, there was an open issue, and the .NET Core team was like, not sure if this is going to be useful. And then the Bing team like prototyped it and said, look, here are the performance improvements we get. And because of that, that's why that feature shipped there. So so this is some really cool stuff. Like Call Eye, I wasn't aware of that. That's there's something that's been around for a while but wasn't in Lineable. And this is Call Eye is like a or Kali or whatever is a it's like PInvoke but a lot faster. So in certain cases, things can go. You can make internal calls much faster. So. One other really cool thing here is this runtime agility. So the ability to have X copy, you know, side by side, CI, all that kind of stuff, being able to roll things out so much quicker. This is pretty big that they're, you know, this is a huge application. And 2 days after .NET Core 2.1 was released, they were live running on it. So neat stuff. Cool. This is just a quick one. Giraffe, this is a
You gotta F-sharp. Make that bigger, my friend. Thank you, sir.
So wow. Giraffe is an F-sharp F-sharp based web framework, right?
Yep.
So Scott, you've done some posts on these in the past. I think you covered Giraffe as part of that.
Right, and it's really cool the way that they've plugged it into ASP.NET Core. Like you can see right there how the Giraffe add Giraffe extension method. Registers the dependency. They're basically using parts of ASP.NET Core that they like and the parts that they don't want, they just plug into the pipeline and they take over. So it's really the best of both worlds and it makes a really comfortable environment for F-sharp people.
Yeah. Cool. So it's neat to see the continued, like they're continuing to build out on this. A big feature here is this is updates for authorization policy and policy-based authorization. So yeah, a lot of good stuff. Last link that I always end up with as we get closer to .NET Conf, just reminding people. So one thing that a favor I would ask of you, even if you're totally aware of .NET Conf, go ahead and save the date so we can kind of track and get an idea of you know, how many people are planning on showing up, that kind of thing. So we've got a cool agenda. The agenda's been published. Last year we had 70 submissions. This year we had over 200.
Can you make that larger, John?
Well, I'd rather people just go and read this on their own time. There's a lot of stuff, right? So, but there's a lot of different.
And there's a lot of local events, aren't there?
Well, yeah, I'll get into that in a second. Yeah, so if you go through and look at the speakers, there are tons of speakers from around the world. And this is the thing, we've got local events, but we also have day three. Actually, let me go back to this agenda.
.NET Bot's gonna be speaking. I saw that.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
That's exciting. So day three of this, we're going all around the world. There are Twitch live stream things from all around the world. It's going round the clock. So this is great. We've got people, we've got every continent speakers presenting from, so that's crazy. And then local events, this is neat. So we have over 100 local events. So this includes live viewing parties during the event, the 12th through the 14th. But then we also have we have follow-on events that you can go register for. So these are all around the world. These are places, you know, near you. So number one, find one that's near you. If there is not one near you, you can register a new one. So you can go and create a new event and tell us about it.
Even
and
now.
What's that?
They can do that even now?
Even now, yeah. They can go. So we have... We have some swag we have sent out to events that have already registered. Can't promise we'll get you swag if you register one late, but still, if you want to have an in-person event and tell us about it and get on the map, we're happy to add you.
Awesome.
Yeah. Hooray, I'm done.
Shiny.
I will share out the links in the chat and put them on the description.
Cool, thanks. All right, cool. So we're going to share your screen, sir?
Sure.
All right.
We can
so
do that.
So click.
So we thought we would spend some time talking about what's coming in 2.2, specifically in preview 1. We've been hard at work on 2.2. I mean, we've already saw some of the community apparently is on the ball and already looking at the bits and trying things out and writing content, which is fabulous. But preview 1 is pretty much done. It's not public yet, but maybe this week. Like we hope to have it out this week to have the bits that you can install and start using and start playing around with the features. It is early in the 2.2 milestone, so things are still being worked on, things are being polished, so there certainly be bugs. I would say this is more like an alpha quality preview for this release. But we expect to have a couple more previews over the course of the remainder of the year before we then ship it. And I think the goal is to have it shipped before the end of calendar year of 2018. That's what we're hoping, but we'll see how the releases go. But this is all the new stuff that's going to be available to start playing around with in preview one. And I thought it might be fun just to take an early look, an early preview of the new features that are coming in this release. So new stuff, the new templates are being updated with getting a facelift. We were moving from Bootstrap 3 to Bootstrap 4. And I think we're on 4.1.3 now. So we're trying to keep up with the latest releases in our third-party dependencies. And so as part of doing the Bootstrap 4 update, we also did a bit of a design cleanup on the templates, simplify, make them a little cleaner looking. We also updated the SPA templates to update their dependencies, and we moved to Angular 6 specifically for the Angular template. And I think Angular 7 actually is slated to come out somewhere later in the fall, so we may have to do another update. I don't know. We'll have to look and see how their release goes. HTTP2 is coming in this release. We've been actually working on HTTP2 for a while.
It's been a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been. It's. I mean, HTTP2 is a pretty involved spec, actually. When I talk to the devs that are working on that protocol implementation, they make it clear that this is not as simple. I mean, HTTP1 itself was not a simple effort. That took honestly I would say even a couple of releases in the ASP.NET Core before the Kestrel implementation of HTTP1 really came of age. Like for a while, we were doing that thing where we were saying we really need to run Kestrel behind some sort of proxying server like IIS or Nginx. Mm-hmm. And it took a little while before we even were comfortable with putting it as an edge server. So HTTP2 is an even more complicated protocol, but we've been working on it, and we now have bits that you can try out with Preview 1. And we'll see a little bit of that. IIS in-process hosting. This is the ASP.NET Core module. Like historically, that's been an out-of-process model where all your requests get forwarded to a .NET .exe process effectively, and that has performance implications. We've been looking at for a little while, trying to improve the performance of that setup by moving the ASP.NET Core logic into the IIS process itself, so you don't have to have that overhead of having an IPC channel communication from the IIS process to the .NET .exe process. And we have the bits are we're planning to ship them with 2.2, which I think we tried to get them out with 2.1. It wasn't ready quite yet. Again, one of those features that has some amount of complexity involved with it. And so we needed a little more time to bake. But in 2.2, it's available, and it's now enabled by default in the 2.2 releases. So we'll take a look at that as well. Big theme for this release has been services and building web APIs. And so we're really trying to improve the experience of building APIs that are descriptive and, in some sense, self-documenting. So if you have an API and you want to generate an open API specification from your API, we'd like to have a really good experience in doing that. If you build an API with previous releases of ASP.NET Core, there was a lot of sort of flexibility, I would say, in how your action methods could be called. Like you could have a parameter that could be it's just as equally been a query string value or a form data value or a header value. Like it was a fairly flexible model binding system. And that's great in terms of functionality, but it means that in terms of providing a description of what your API supports, it meant the matrix was pretty large. So we've been trying to add conventions that make things a little bit more opinionated, that give your APIs a better description that you can then use for things like code generation, documentation, testing tools, and the like. So another round of web API conventions in this release. Endpoint routing. We saw the blog post earlier about what we've been doing there. In the past, you may have heard the term dispatcher. This is an effort to improve our routing system so that it is available throughout the stack as opposed to being kind of an MVC-specific thing. Like you should be able to link to a MVC action or a page from your from middleware, or you should be able to link to like a Signal hub from middleware. Enabling those types of scenarios is what the endpoint routing is all about. And performance honestly gets better across the board with the new routing system. Health checks, making it so that you can stand up endpoints so that you know your services are live and healthy and chugging along. We are now shipping the health checks API with ASP.NET Core in 2.2. And then Signal Java Client, a new Java Client, so you can write all your Android apps and talk to your SignalR hubs and get real-time data. That's the list of stuff that's coming in preview one. Mm-hmm. And some things are more feature complete than others in this release, but.
Do you know how many previews there'll be?
We expect, I think what we published in there was a roadmap announcement. Actually, I want to just bring that up so that everyone knows where to see this.
That's a comforting dialogue.
Oh, the Visual Studio's doing
the infinite progress bar of patience there.
Yeah, so if you go to the announcements repo on GitHub, so ASP.NET announcements, and if you look in the issues, mm-hmm. there was a ASP.NET Core 2.2 roadmap that we published not that long ago. So if you click on that, that has a sort of a outline of all the features that we were planning to do with this release.
Yeah, so there and you can see three previews.
Yep.
Before end of year.
Yep, that's the plan. So August preview is what we're doing right now. We plan to do another preview in September and October, and then try and ship it before the end of the year. That's the planned schedule. And you can get a feel for all the features that we're trying to do in this release through the roadmap. So definitely check that out. Some of these things are done, some of them are not. For example, you saw at the bottom there was the C++ client for SignalR, like that's not something that's in this preview release. Yeah, so has it actually already been pushed out too? So the roadmaps, we do our best to try and predict the future, look in our crystal ball about how much we can actually get done in a release, and some things make it and some things don't. So that's an example of a feature that actually got pushed out. But a lot of this stuff is certainly in. All right, cool. So shall we take a look? So shall we play around with the bits? So what I did is I grabbed basically the latest CI build, and I think it's actually still the candidate build for what we're planning to ship. And I started playing around with the features to see what the state of things are, and I thought I would do a few demos. Let's try to take a look at a few things. So let's go into Visual Studio, and if you do File, New Project, new web application, my 23rd web application apparently. Let's make it 27 for good measure, since that's my favorite number. And what we should see, I've installed the latest SDK, and you can see I have the ASP.NET Core 2.2 showing up as an option in the dialog. The SDK version that I currently have, if we take a look, let's see, .NET version, I'm on 2.2.100 preview 1.9349 is the current build that I'm on. I don't know if you can see that. So there, that's the current build of this SDK. And so you can create an ASP.NET Core 2.2 application. We can go ahead and do that. And let's take a look and see what we now get in these templates. Oh, interesting. That's an interesting dialogue. I haven't seen that one before.
Is that bad?
So this. So an interesting question about what version of Visual Studio you should be using with 2.2 bits. Mm. The plan is that we're going to be recommending 15.9. 15.9 is the version of Visual Studio that you're going to want to use. Right now,
they're on 8, though.
Yes, we're currently on 8. The 15.9 is in the preview channel, so you can get 15.9 through preview. I actually don't have 15.9 preview installed yet. Probably should be doing that.
Do you want to do that and switch
right
demos?
Now? No, this will be fine. So there's currently an issue with the SDK where with Visual Studio actually where it's saying that you need 15.7 or newer. It really should be saying 15.9 or newer. That message will be updated. But 15.9 is the planned targeted update for ASP.NET Core 2.2 and .NET Core 2.2. But it still works with the older versions of Visual Studio. There are just newer features that you may run into issues with. So for example, the new ASP.NET Core module that supports in-process hosting, that's something that to wire that up with IIS Express, we need extra Visual Studio changes. So that's going to be one of the features that's going to require 15.9.
Is this a new template?
This is the new template. So I think we showed this a little bit before in the last community stand-up. Mm-hmm. But this is Bootstrap 4 based. We can see that if we go into our WP root folder and look at the... Actually, let's look at the index, the layout. And look at a couple things here. And is it big enough? Should I make it bigger?
Not big enough.
Not big enough.
My value that I add to the people and to the community is to just sit and tell everyone to make their fonts bigger until they become irritated with it.
That doesn't stick. That thing doesn't stick, though.
You could that's the
newbie way of doing it.
How did
it,
you get there? Did you go tools options or did you go to
I did the quick launch font.
Quick
that's
launch.
The right
good
way.
Job.
Yeah, good tip.
Good job,
okay, so things you'll notice. The Bootstrap link is a Bootstrap 413 mm-hmm. link. So we have Bootstrap 413 in the templates. You'll also notice that we're now pulling it off of CDN.js. So instead of using our own CDN, we're now just using the public existing ones that are popular in the community. This aligns us with Libman, which is the new VS tooling for managing client-side dependencies. They also, by default, will pull from CDN.js. We'd love to hear what people think about this. Like, is this a good idea? Should we be using a different CDN than this one? There's a few options out there. We looked at them, and this one seemed to have the most usage behind it. So that's currently what we're trying out, and it's definitely an area we'd love to get feedback on.
And but, one nice feature there is it's more likely someone might have those files already cached on their machine, right?
If it's a popular CDN. It's a fairly commonly used CDN, so you get that additional benefit. The other things you'll notice about the template is that it's much more minimalistic than mm-hmm. previous versions of the template. The Jumbotron, I call it like the billboard that we used to have in the old template.
With the carousel. Sliding in. Yeah, the carousel. Exactly.
The carousel is now gone. We've simplified all the links on there that kind of cluttered up the page. The idea here was to try and reduce the amount of code that you have to delete when you actually create an app and want to then use it for development. Again, we'd love to know what people think about the new look and the sort of minimalistic approach to the project templates.
It's pretty minimal.
It is very minimal.
I'd probably add a couple more bullets with more links to stuff.
You like bullets and links?
Somewhere between where we had before, which was too many carousels and graphics, and what we have now, which is the word welcome.
Yeah.
I would probably add some bulleted links.
Absolutely.
I'd be interested in what do people in the chat say?
What's the consensus, John?
I'm personally a fan of the more minimalistic style.
You like the minimalistic?
Well, then why not welcome to ASP.NET Core?
Yeah, like I think other ones, when you create a new app, it says like, you just created an app with Vue, or you created you know what I mean? It says a little.
To at least advertise that it's which technology you just used to create the project?
People are saying, keep it simple. There's less to delete when
less
you start
delete.
A new project.
That's what we heard.
I'm just saying.
I didn't actually show the
you've got page one and page two is interesting. But I'm used to always the about and contact and all that. I mean, I get
it. The idea is just to show that you can have n number of pages, right?
Yeah, that's cool.
So this is also the new cookie consent.
Wow, people
UI.
In the chat are saying they want totally blank templates.
Completely blank. Well, there's empty. There is the empty template.
All right, well, I lose then. Everyone wants to know what's on page two.
I want a Jumbotron with happy business people
shaking
hands.
Oh, that's a nice GDPR thing, isn't it?
So yeah, it used to be that the cookie consent dialog would UI would like cover up the nav bar and people didn't seem to like that. So now it's a dismissible thing below the nav bar. Another interesting is page one and page two actually don't go anywhere. They're just showing you how to use the nav bar. We didn't actually even add in page one and page two. That was based on like the Bootstrap theme that we based the template on. They had that similar pattern where they just had some links in the nav bar and were like, this is how you do nav bar links.
The thing I don't like about that is you're brand new to ASP.NET. You've just shown up. You see this nice empty template. You click on page one and you see this goofy looking URL and you think that that's the way to do things now. But if you actually had a page one, it would say /page1. Right now, as a new person, I'm like, wow,
Scott, you were very
I don't
observed.
Like ASP.NET's this, goofy looking URL.
This is actually an example of like why this is an alpha release. Like this is actually a bug in the template.
Ignore everything I just said.
The page links on this, like this is a Racer Pages based template, but currently the page one and page two links that are generated are using the MVC pattern of specifying an action and controller.
Wouldn't they have then said /home/index?
Because there is no route for home and index to fill it in, then you end up with the routing pattern where you end up with the action and controller end up in the query string. So that will change. That would be just page one.
Okay.
That would be correct. So yes, we will fix that.
So what about
then it would be a 404.
If I did have identity?
Go ahead, sorry?
If I did have identity, it'll just go page one, page two, log or register?
Yes. So if you add an identity, you get the right register and login links, and you get the normal identity UI, and those appear on the upper right-hand side as well.
I realize that everyone who is on chat here is saying that they desperately want us to have nothing, but there's got to be at least one additional page.
I'd be curious, for the people that are saying they want nothing, is the empty template exactly what you want? Or is even that not enough of nothing?
People are saying links that do nothing are misleading.
Okay.
You need to be able to show routing in the template. Okay. You need to add a new template for these scenarios. A couple of people are desperately asking for a left side nav bar. I think nav bars are up to Bootstrap, so we're probably not going to do that. But I think the point is there are two kinds of people. There are people who understand that empty is all they want, mm-hmm. But then there were the rest of us that understand that a new person needs to at least see something. What's my 10-year-old going to do at this point?
The Get Started product template that you do the first time you use ASP.NET Core or .NET Core, I think needs to have a little bit of stuff in it. It needs to have some pages, mm-hmm. needs to have some links, needs to show you how to do a few things. A
couple of tag helpers.
For the people that are doing like day-to-day development that have already done the Getting Started experience and want a starting point for building their next app for a new project, I'm guessing that that's what the people that are asking for empty, that's what
right.
they're looking
for. Just think that in the refreshing of this standard or default template, let us put extra attention on empty.
Okay. And I would love to hear from people what they think about the existing empty template. Like, is it what you want? Like, I think empty right now has just like a single middleware that returns hello world.
Right, is it too empty?
Yeah, is it too empty? Like some people have asked, can you take the empty template and just add a single page or add a single controller or something? Like at least have MVC concepts in the empty template so that you know how to use that. But that makes it less empty. Is that too much? Like, we'd love to hear what people's thoughts on that. Obviously, we're not going to be able to, maybe we won't be able to make everyone happy, but we'd love to make the majority as happy as possible.
So our empty template has like the middleware, which just writes the response, hello world. But like if you look at like Node and Express, they have like basic routing and it just has like, it gives you a page. It's like, welcome to Express.
Right. I almost feel like the one that we just saw there was almost an appropriate empty template. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it's pretty darn empty.
This has got Bootstrap in it. This has got like sorts of stuff.
Show me the other one.
So this is the new Spot template. So the Spot template still does have some content in it. Curious to hear what people think about that for people who want to
a little bit more content.
We did shift the Spot templates to, like, we decided that the templates should be consistent in terms of their nav bars. Like before, the Spot templates had a left nav, so now it has a top nav. It still has the same functionality as before, you know, a counter and a fetch data page. We went for consistency here instead of a left nav, but you know, let us know what you think
about
that.
See, I know that people hate deleting stuff, but I tell you, I'd put in a link to the ASP.NET community stand-up, you know what I mean?
On the homepage?
You gotta tell people about community.
Then we end up with the carousel
this
again.
This is my job. I think a list of bullets is not a bad thing.
It's the battle against marketing. So just to
but
show
in the interest of time, what else do we got?
In the Angular template, just to show that this also now has Angular 6. So if we look in the package.json file for this guy, you can see it's using Angular 6 across the board. I think Angular 6 is now up to 6.1, so we will update that as the Angular
it'll be as on 6.2 by the end of this call.
Yeah, well, maybe 7. Like 7 is supposed to come out in September or October. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So they move pretty fast.
It's like Chrome.
This is actually one of the reasons why we're thinking about taking the Spot templates and not having them baked in the SDK, because they need to update whenever the client libraries update.
Right.
And we can't ship an SDK release every single time Angular decides to push a release or Bootstrap decides to update. So we're thinking that maybe all these templates actually just need to be just NuGet template packs on NuGet. That's the current thinking. We're not going to do that in 2.2, but future thinking, that's what we're looking at. Okay, what else should we look at? Let's look at the wire a little bit for this project and notice something that's happening on the network. So if I refresh, you'll notice there's a protocol column down here and it's showing H2. Which is an abbreviated version of HTTP2. Awesome. So this application out of the box has HTTP2 turned on.
And you're talking to Kestrel.
Yeah, this is talking directly actually in this case, this app is going through IIS Express.
You ran this in Visual Studio, so you're on IIS Express.
Should we do that?
Do you have Express in the corner there?
Yeah, Express.
I'm impressed that you're running this on battery too. Good job.
Oh, it's gutsy. We got half the time to go. Should we try it on Kestrel? Like, I haven't actually. Let's do a test live.
Let's go for it.
Now
the circle of patience. Now, what have you done?
Hold on.
Debugging now.
Yeah.
Wow. This is like a daily build, so don't judge us.
Let's kill that. Stop.
The fan just turned on.
It's because your homepage is too empty.
Here we go.
True. Yeah. Okay. If you had more links in the homepage, it would be faster.
Kestrel now has native support for HTTP2. So things that we support here now, like HTTP2 has the multiplexing of the connection, so you can have
does
multiple
Does it say streams. Anything about HTTP2 in the little DOS box?
No, it doesn't.
I feel like it should.
Okay.
I'd like to know.
That would be interesting.
I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of I'm a little OG in that I like when I learn about HTTP and I teach classes on HTTP, I open up Telnet. And I make the students telnet to port 80 and then type HTTP. I need to refresh my knowledge of HTTP 2 to know if such a thing is possible anymore.
Sure.
There's value in understanding.
So in the, like, the wire, .NET run experience up at the top here, in addition to just URLs, it'd be nice to say,
up.
Like, by the way, you're binding to not just HTTP 1, but also HTTP 2.
Just like we tell them about SSL, you know, we should tell them about that.
So HTTP 2 is working with Kestrel. Things we do support the multiplexing of the streams, you know, the compressed headers, all that stuff. Things that we do not support, we don't support server push. That's not something we currently plan to add. I believe we don't currently have prioritization of the streams in this release either. So those are two things that are not enabled
what
yet.
What does that mean, prioritization?
Well, if you have multiple streams going over the same channel, you can specify. I believe you can specify priorities.
Oh, you said like this one's super important. Like the stock ticker is more important than the chat.
I believe that's the way that works, yes.
Wouldn't I use SignalR for that?
Well, actually, that's a great question. Like, maybe you have. Is there any thinking or thoughts around doing SignalR over an HTTP2 channel? Is that a thing? Is that something that we should do? Have you guys talked about that?
That's not something we've really talked about yet. We're still sort of in the middle of like working on 2.2 stuff that we've got slated and figuring out like 3.0 planning. We've got a bunch of features that hasn't really come into conversation yet, but I'll can bring it up.
I'm probably asking a question that exposes my extreme ignorance. But
no, it's a good question.
What is the relationship between HTTP 1, 2, and WebSockets?
So WebSockets is an upgrade from HTTP 1. HTTP 2 is a separate protocol that you negotiate as part of
the TLS
engine.
So it's an upgrade, because I've seen the upgrade requested negotiation. WebSockets runs on top of HTTP 1 or to the side of?
It's more like kind of to the side, because the upgrade handshake is done as part of the HTTP 1 protocol.
But what port is it over? It's still over the same port, right?
It's still over the same.
Does WebSockets have headers for HTTP, or is it?
No.
No. Once you upgrade to a WebSocket, it's like having a raw TCP connection, effectively.
So how would that relate to HTTP 2?
So the thing about HTTP 2 is it also gives you this effectively a duplex channel. So you could, a lot of people have actually asked the question, like, do we even need WebSockets anymore, given that you can have an HTTP 2 channel, because you can just have, like, these long-standing responses from the server.
Hence the question, how would SignalR over HTTP 2 work?
Yeah, is that a thing? I actually hadn't known if there was plans. Sounds like we're still thinking about that. I mean, it's worth noting that the HTTP 2 implementation in ASP.NET Core is still pretty new. Even though we've been working on it for a while, there's a lot of work still to be done on it. We've turned it on by default deliberately in the previews because we want to hear feedback from people. We want them to be trying it so we can flush out those bugs. There's known issues right now with the performance of the HTTP 2 implementation in Kestrel that we still need to optimize and work on. Like, one of the whole points of HTTP 2 is supposed to be perf, and we're not quite there yet. So it may be that the SignalR folks are just sort of like, well, let's wait till HTTP 2 actually bakes.
Bake one thing before you bake the other.
Yeah, exactly. But it's there, so please try it and let us know how it goes. If you hit bugs, please file them. Performance issues, please let us know. So that's HTTP2. Next one I want to talk about is the ASP.NET Core module. Yeah, go ahead. So I don't think I'm going to actually, there's not much to demo on this one. But this is a moving ASP.NET Core apps to run in IIS in process is something I've been working on for a little while. The diagram on the left is how the ASP.NET Core apps work in IIS today, where the process forwards requests to the .NET exe process where your app actually runs. In the in-process model, which we are previewing with Preview 1, instead, ASP.NET Core actually and the .NET Core itself runs in process in the IIS worker process, and that gives us much better performance. We've also done a bunch of work to give us some release agility as part of this work, where a lot of the ASP.NET Core module can be updated as part of like bringing NuGet packages from your application.
So remind me, it's been years. IIS worker process, that's W3 WP EXE.
I believe so. Yeah.
So in the context on the left there, if .NET.exe poofs, if it disappears, if an exception rolls all the way up and that thing dies, this ANCM in the out of process context fires up another .NET.
Yeah, and well, or like one common problem that we hear about a lot is if the .NET exe process fails to start.
Okay.
And then you just get, and ANCM can try to restart it, but it doesn't, it keeps failing to start, and then you get like a 502 style error where like your application failed to start, and that's kind of tricky to diagnose, because you need to go figure out why did the .NET exe process have an issue with startup? Like it threw an exception at some point, something you need to go digging through logs to figure that out. One of the nice things about the in-process model is that diagnosing any issue with your startup logic becomes a lot easier because you're debugging it right within the IIS worker process itself.
Okay.
And performance is like almost 4 times faster. Like this is our latest numbers from our internal benchmarks. This is the returning chunk of JSON benchmark from, I believe, from Tech Empower. The green line at the bottom is the performance of IIS hosting with the like 2-1 bits, and the sort of pinkish line at the top, that's with the new in-process model and in ASP.NET Core 2.2, so quite a bit better in terms of performance. Now, with the preview 1 bits, actually using the new in-process in-proc model does require a little work. You do have to set an MS build property in your CSproj file. You have to then publish your app, and then you should be good to go on IIS. But it's not something that you'll get out of the box with the F5 experience in Visual Studio until I think 15.9 preview 2 is when we plan to actually have that integration done. So The dev experience will take a little longer, but for deployments, you can at least try it in with preview 1 bits. And we are getting a little long on time, and I want to make sure we give Mikhail the time to show the SignalR client. So why don't we then move to SignalR?
All right, so let's switch over here. And then I also have to go film Azure Friday soon, too.
That is HTTP/HTML2. I'm going to upgrade the WebSockets right now.
There we go.
Cool. So yeah, here I'm just going to go over really briefly some of the SignalR Java client.
So, and is this out or coming? What's the status of this?
So technically, there is a like staged public build available, but our official preview 1 bits will be available this week, hopefully. We have a candidate build.
Cool.
So I just want to show you how...
I think you have a PR out with this particular sample on the SignalR samples repo. So
yeah,
if you want to go
poking
around in the SignalR samples repo, you can see the code that he's going to be showing you today.
And I'm going to give you an opportunity to make your fonts bigger before, publicly shame you into making your fonts bigger.
Can I do this?
You can do that, but it's not a live view. So as long as you're not changing any code. That's using Zoomit?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't like type.
Sure.
Okay, cool.
So basically, this is just a Java application.
What freakish IDE are you in right here?
This is IntelliJ IDE. So basically, what we have here is what we have to do for now, because it's not a public build yet. Mm-hmm. We have to define our staging repository. And then from there, we can add the SignalR dependency. Mm-hmm. So we just add another sort of node within our dependencies tags. And
so this is like Maven?
Yeah, this is Maven.
Okay, so this is the Java NuGet. This is like evil Spock with the beard and the whole thing.
The dark side.
The dark side, yeah. Okay, cool. So in a parallel universe, you say com.microsoft.asp.net.
Yeah, artifact ID SignalR, and then the version number. And then, if we go over to chat, I just wrote a simple chat application, which needs up a hub connection, takes input from the scanner for defining which SignalR server you want to connect to. Mm-hmm. We define our on handler, so when we receive an invocation from the server with the target of send, we basically just take the arguments from that invocation from the server, and we can do whatever logic we want. Here, we just print it.
It looks and feels surprisingly like C#. Like you get that kind of like Spanish and Italian kind of thing. Like these languages may be related.
That was a design goal, I believe.
Like, yeah. That was something that was one of my main goals, is like making the API sort of feel the same, right? Mm-hmm. Like so. When you're writing the Java, you're not like, oh man, how do I do this Java specific thing? It's like, okay, this is pretty much very similar to what we have in C#. There will be some differences, but I wanted it to really sort of feel the same.
Right, but you also are balancing it should feel like ASP.NET and SignalR to SignalR familiar people, but it should also be idiomatic Java and use Java-isms.
So like one thing is like, everything is like starting with lowercase, which is super annoying. But that's just like a Java thing.
That is super annoying.
It is. If I make everyone upset and zoom out, if we run this, you can see it'll ask us the URL of the SignalR chat we want to join. And so this is an application that I have running.
This is an ASP.NET application?
ASP.NET application okay. with SignalR server configured. We specify the hub URL.
Mm-hmm. So that's ASP.NET Core.
Yeah,
ASP.NET Core. Pardon
excuse
me.
Excuse me.
Not to confuse people.
And this is the application here running live. So if I have a different client here, this is using the JavaScript client. If I hit broadcast with the message browser, if we go back, we can see that we have this printed. We received that invocation. So we can say from here, hello from the console. And if we hit send, we should be able to go back and see that.
Hello from the console.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
cool.
Then if we go one more window over, we can see the actual
with the virtual desktops. And
we can see very similar. So this uses Android Studio in general uses Gradle rather than Maven. So we can see how we would bring in the SignalR Java client here instead of, or we still basically have to define this repo, the staging repo. So it's very similar. So this is in our project level build.gradle. And then for the app level build.gradle, we have to, in our dependencies, similar to Maven, add another node. And we just define it the same way. It just is in a different shape. It's one line instead of like seven. So we have com, Microsoft ASP.NET, blah, blah, blah. And there will be information in the 2.2 preview one blog post with the updated like build numbers for like the actual like release preview one build.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How did you debug this stuff? Is this like a Wireshark kind of situation where you're like watching bits on the wire? Or are you like, how much of this are you able to abstract away? Or are you looking at the protocol and watching things go by like byte by byte?
Like
when you were writing, when you're like, oh, I guess I got to write the Java client for SignalR now. Like, are you drawing on whiteboards of like byte alignment and trying to figure out how things work? Like, how low level was this?
Well, I mean, essentially, it's like we have our hub protocol like spec'd out totally, mm-hmm. and it kind of just starts from okay, what is like the quickest way I can just get something like written in Java to mm-hmm. connect to a SignalR server? Like, literally, just find a WebSocket library, plug in a URL.
I
format
see.
The handshake, and then send it and just get anything.
Get some kind of ACK.
Yeah. Like just connect and like get a positive response.
Mm.
And then from there, like making it look more and more like a client. Mm. So it's not like writing out all this stuff and figuring out like making it look professional from the first go. It's like literally get start to work
mm-hmm.
and then build the client around that and then sort of make it look more real and have it feel like the C# and JavaScript client.
Did you bump into any problems with Java, any robustness issues, or does it work pretty solid?
So one thing that you can see here is like, for like the, let me see if I
can. You can probably go.
I want to see the Android app run. I haven't seen it run yet. Is it running?
Sorry.
So we'll run it here.
Is it the Android app in the iPhone skin? What is that?
It's a Pixel, actually.
It's a Pixel?
Yeah, so it's just like the white.
That was correct.
Oh my God, it's true.
So essentially, let's see, can I make this big?
Are you running Haxi, or which emulator are you using here?
This is just like the built-in, like out-of-the-box Android emulator, which is like really impressive because I've been doing Android development like back in school, and it used to, when you hit run, you could like go run to the library,
like
come back, get a snap. Like, no, it's really working well now.
Kind of snappier.
So if we say hello from, let's fix the case in Android, and we hit send.
I'm afraid I need to run to Azure Friday. They're waiting for me.
Cool. There it is. That's sweet.
We've got Android running. And this is just a simple app that I have. It will be posted in the SignalR-samples repo. Until then, I just have it like on my personal GitHub, but you'll be able to see it there in the SignalR-samples repo. This is SignalR, the Android or the Java client running on Android.
And you call it 0.1 right now.
Yeah.
How will you decide 0.9, 1.0 release?
I'm not super sure. I'm not really in charge of like the version numbers.
I believe the plan is to ship it in line with the 2.2 release milestones.
Okay, cool. So this will come with 2.2.
I mean, subject to change, of course, as always, because these are previews and we make decisions based on what we hear from customers and so forth.
Keep going. If you need to keep going, I'm just going to run into the next studio.
Okay, yeah.
We have lots of time. Just remember,
to push both this button and that button when you're done.
Okay, okay. We'll let Scott go do his Azure Friday thing. That was awesome.
Cool.
Let me pull back then. I'll show just a couple quick more things.
Here you go. Take your time.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about routing. Ooh. So these are the numbers that we're seeing now with the MVC route, the new endpoint routing system in ASP.NET Core 2.2. We're seeing about a 10% performance bump with the new routing implementation. Wow. So when you think about endpoint routing, you should think about it as basically a rewrite of routing. I think that's honestly the right way to think about it. There's the existing routing system that's in ASP.NET Core today that you're using if you're using MVC or Razor Pages or building web APIs. We're doing another turn of the crank, and there's a couple reasons for that. One is to get performance benefits like this. Another is because we really would like the routing concepts to apply broadly across ASP.NET Core. You should be able to use link generation from middleware to route to a hub or to an API action or to a controller action in your application. So that's the goal. As a result, there are changes.
I thought already we kind of did some stuff with that. With like way back in the day, routing came out with MVC, and then we're like, oh, this should be plumbed in through everything, like back even with web forms, right? We kind of rolled it back into routing being kind of a more global concept. It's true
that the like routing middleware is a decoupled piece, but each route is basically each route is kind of like its own world of implementation. Like you have to execute the route code in order to figure out what does it do, and all of that logic really ends up being MVC logic. Like there's no notion of that being something that's sort of independent that you can you could use from like a middleware. Like it's there's a lot of stuff that happens in routing that actually happens at the MVC layer that's built on top of the core routing abstractions, but ends up being really only useful to MVC as a result. Okay. We'd really like to make that functionality more broadly applicable. Is really what this is all about.
So. And I hope you don't mind throwing in a few random questions here. I'll keep them short because I know we're time-wise and all that. But we've talked about like, hey, it would be nice to have them available in middleware. What are some actual like uses of that?
Yeah,
how
sure.
would I actually make use of that?
So, like, if you want to have middleware that generates anything with links, like generates either a page or errors or whatever that needs to say, then by the way, this is where here's my privacy page, or here's my, trying to think what would be a great example of this. If you wanted to generate documentation for your API, honestly, you could do this at this layer now by scan. You can inspect and generate links for anything in your API from a middleware layer and have it be a reusable component. So that's something you could do, as opposed to having to have that live in the MVC layers.
And maybe this fits in. Eugene just asked you a question. Does endpoint routing make it easier to support adding new routes to MVC controllers dynamically, not just at startup, but add remove routes like that map to a controller?
I don't know. Like for dynamic addition, it's not something that I, as far as I know, that we've been talking. It may be, but I don't know. Honestly, the answer to that one, if this is a really adds a dynamic support. It's more about making like the route table inspectable, making the notion of what the endpoints are known upfront, making them things that you can route to upfront without having to get to some point in the pipeline where you then have to execute a bunch of code to figure out, well, what are all the endpoints that I could potentially link to? That's the high level idea. Let's show you just a quick app that demonstrates.
One last
that.
Question.
Yeah, go ahead.
How does this have any changes to attribute routing, or does attribute routing just continue to do what it does?
The programming model for attribute routing works the same way. You still add the same attributes to your controllers and actions. The underlying infrastructure that's actually resolving the routes and doing the linking is being replaced, and so you're getting the new implementation of the routing system under the covers.
Cool. Okay, so be sure to hit the magic button.
So let's. Just to show an example of what you can do today, it's worth calling out that also with the endpoint routing, it's a bit of a journey. Like we have the vision of it being this generic dispatcher that you can route to any endpoint in your application, and then there's what's actually implemented in preview one. The things that you'll be able to do in preview one is you'll be able to get a new service, which is this link generator service, which is available through DI. And you can then use that from pretty much anywhere in the application to generate links to MVC endpoints. Okay, so you can generate links to your MVC actions, your Razor pages. That's what I'm doing here. Like, I'm in this application, I'm using the link generator to generate a link to my privacy page. And if we just run this real quick, I think I've put it on a mapped it to the slash routing path, so we should be able to see that working. In the future, of course, you'd like to be able to link to other things as well, and that's some one of the items that we still need to go and implement. But with what we've got, if we go to slash routing, you know, I can see I get a correct route to my privacy page based on the path to the page on disk. So that's kind of cool. So start playing around with that. We're interested in particular to see how this affects existing applications, because there are some you know, anytime you sort of re-implement something, there are some subtle behavior changes that occur. Like what happens when you link to something that doesn't exist? The behavior right now is a little bit different. Like it will generate a link with an empty string as opposed to a link with values that just goes to a 404. You know, we'd love to hear what people think about that. So try upgrading your applications with this new routing system and see if how much it, we're actually curious to see how much does it break. Like is there anything that's overly disruptive that we actually need to align closer with the old routing system? The way it's controlled, like how you get the new routing system, is purely by saying that your compatibility version is 2.2. So that by having that in there, you will get the new routing system. If you need to roll it back, you can go into the MVC options and flip a switch and say use the old routing system instead of the new one if you hit too many breaking changes and you need to get something working. So that's how you do that. So that's the new routing system. And the last thing I just wanted to show is health checks real quick. So with health checks is a way to stand up a simple endpoint that infrastructure can hit to tell that your services and your application are actually live. It's a library we've actually been playing around with for a while. We just haven't had a chance to completely bake it and get it shipping, but it's now shipping with 2.2. It's in the box. In this application, I've added health checks to the application, and you can see I've added a single check. It has just a name is what this config name is. And then this check is saying, my app is healthy if this particular config value exists in the application. And you can think of this as sort of like being an analogous to checking, like, is my database connection live, is what this is trying to show. You could do something very similar. In fact, we hope to in the future have like sugar methods where it's like, you know, like add DB context check or something like that, where would check to make sure that your DB context is there and it's live and running. But for now, this is just sort of a simple mock version of a health check where I'm just checking to see, do I have a particular required config value?
And this is how you can sort of set your definition of what being healthy means,
yep,
right?
Yep. And you can add as many checks as you want. And then down below, to actually stand up the health check endpoint, you say just use health checks. If you run this version of the application, and if we go to slash health, let's see if it says. Okay, so currently I'm healthy, so that's good. If I go back to my application and mess around with the config, let's say, like, let's get rid of this required config value that I need in order to be healthy. Just save that, and if I refresh, you can see now the endpoint is saying that you're unhealthy. So you can then integrate these endpoints with things like Kubernetes, which Kubernetes has infrastructure for checking like health endpoints of your application. You can wire it up with like the Azure Traffic Manager. It has capabilities of pointing it at the health endpoints for your app, and it will then be able to detect, is the app online or not? And if it's not online, like the Traffic Manager could then roll traffic over to other nodes in your application to make sure that your customers are still happy.
Now, so I imagine you can configure this so that like the on-call engineers then get like texts that say that, oh, the whatever service is not running properly.
Yeah, then you do that. Or even like if you're like in the middle of a deployment, like you deployed something and the deployment, you know, broke something, you didn't deploy something correctly, you could stop the deployment and then roll back and correct things in that way. So that's what that does. So just in summary, here's all the stuff that you'll see in preview one. We've shown most of these things. I think we showed the Web API conventions at the last community stand-up, so if you missed that, you should go back and check the last recording. Pranav showed some of the new conventions that we're adding and the analyzer that allows you to, you know, add attributes to indicate which HTTP status codes your actions returns and things like that. And we should have bits for you to actually use, hopefully later this week.
So for people that are watching, want to keep up with that, where do they get the bits? Do they watch for the,
watch the blog.
Announcement repo?
Yeah, we will publish a blog post on the ASP.NET blog, the web dev blog, as soon as the release goes live. You'll see the releases go live in the repos. There'll also be, I believe, on the .NET site, the core .NET site, you'll see a banner advertising the preview there as well.
Great. Okay. This is exciting. So I'm actually relatively new on the DZO, also known as Dramatic Zoom Out, technology that we can support in that room.
I don't think it exists. At least not that I know of.
I know Damien did some weird thing with OBS, so I don't know what we do. Do we just dramatically just stop? And also, the recording's running from your side. So.
Yeah, I can stop the recording. Should we do the? We're gonna fall backwards. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4. It's like knockover things.